So there's a phrase that we use at times, and it's called, you know, I'm just going to put in my 2 cents worth. And it's an expression that basically it's making a statement that we're going to state an opinion. You know, so it's not just an opinion, but it's one that's kind of laying out a little bit of groundwork by being deprecating. Just follow that maybe my advice is only worth the 2 pennies that you have in your pocket, which is a very slow, very small percentage. I mean, a very small amount. Basically, it's a phrase of showing politeness. It's a phrase of showing a little bit of humility, hoping that they will actually find value in what is about to be said. Sometimes it's something that's being said that is kind of laying out and smoothing out the groundwork for something that might be a little bit difficult or contentious. So we want to be able to, we just want to be able to say something, and it's just a way of kind of introducing the subject. There's a lot of debate about where we get this term. But most people feel that we get this term actually from the Bible. And we're going to be looking at the passage that we actually get this term from, and it's found in Mark chapter 12, beginning in verse 41. And if you have your Bibles, I want to encourage you to open it up and look at this. Now, Jesus, if you remember, he's been having these running feud really all through his ministry with religious leadership. But now he's in Jerusalem. It's coming up to the time of his death, and he is actually being confronted by the religious establishment, all the religious establishment, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes, the priests. Everyone is feuding with Jesus Christ, and he is pushing back and exposing their hypocrisy, exposing their pride, exposing their greed. And right before this passage of Scripture, one of the things that Jesus was doing was telling people to beware of the scribes, because they walk around in robes and like greetings in the marketplace. They like the best seats and in the synagogues. And one of the things it talks about is that they devour widows' homes. So in their greed, they would even take the sparse income of a widow in order to satisfy their own sense of privilege, their own sense of power, to add to their riches. Somebody who is as completely marginalized as a widow in the ancient world, whom the Bible countlessly times talks about taking care of her. They had no intention, these religious leaders. They just saw it as an easy mark, as easy prey. And so we continue on in this time when Jesus now is shifting and now using a widow as an illustration of great sacrifice, of really a great kingdom impact, as opposed to these religious leaders. So look at verse 41. And he, talking about Jesus, sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. This is probably in the outer court where the women were allowed to come into the temple. The temple would have about, I think it's about 13 different trumpet-like brass receptors for money. So people would come in and throw it in. It would probably make some noise when the rich would come in. They'd make a big deal about their giving, making sure that people could see that they were giving, that they were the biggest givers. So people were putting the money in the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in 2 small copper coins, which make a penny. You know, in older translations, it's called 2 mites, you know, the widow's mites. And these were the smallest coins in circulation at that time. And they equaled about 1/64th of a day's wage. But it was all she had. It was everything she had in the world. And she brought it to give an offering. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, "Truly, I say to you, this poor woman has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box." Now, it's interesting. Jesus would have been standing there kind of watching, and the disciples were probably watching the rich people come in, watching to see how much they were giving, maybe because they were making a big deal about it. This woman came in unnoticed, probably came in unnoticed by everyone except for Jesus. And here she is taking what meager pittance that she has and putting it into the offering. And then he goes on and he says in verse 44, "For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." So when God looks at this, when the Lord is looking at this, he's not so impressed by the wealthy. He's not moved by how much they are putting in, because they have a lot to live on. They were given a donation, if you will. She was giving a sacrifice. You know, it reminds me of an old joke where a chicken and a pig were talking about, I had saw a news flyer talking about children that are going hungry in the countryside there in their local town. And the chicken looks at the pig and says, "You know, we should do something about that. We can help feed these children." And the pig said, "Well, for you, that's a donation. For me, that's a sacrifice." And so one of the things is that she, this widow, was actually making a sacrifice, something that actually cost her something. If I were to guess and speculate, and we always want to be careful about speculating, I would say that everyone but Jesus saw her give as nothing. I think she probably saw it that way too. I think she wasn't going, "Oh, I'm giving everything I have." I think she was probably wishing she could give more. I think she was probably watching everybody else, and she looks at this and just thinking, "This isn't very much, but it's what I have, and I want to give it." It was an act of worship. But she probably wished it could have been a little bit bigger. And when we take a look at this passage, one of the things that I think it speaks to us about is that we need to recognize that sometimes what is small, what is little, makes a big kingdom impact. Her small ability, her small contribution made a huge kingdom impact. I think she could be a great example for us in reminding ourselves that sometimes we think we can't make much of a difference, that we're unable to truly make an impact. After all, I don't have millions of dollars. I can't sing that well. I don't have any real talents. We can make all kinds of excuses of why we cannot make an impact, when the reality is the abilities that we have, when we use them, when we're able to influence the small grouping around us, that can make a huge impact. I've been on this book reading kick of reading all these different biographies, so I've read American Ulysses about U.S. Grant. Hope that you got to watch the biography, the documentary on the History Channel. It was really good. I read his wife's memoirs, Julia Dent Grant's memoirs, which were very interesting. First lady to write her memoirs. I read about Phil Sheridan, one of the generals that was with Grant. I read Frederick Douglass, who's a contemporary there, and his fight for freedom for his people. I read Abraham Lincoln, who was the key to the Civil War and kind of keeping the country on task to make it a nation of freedom for all. I just started reading a book about Harriet Tubman and how she, really to look at her, you wouldn't expect much, but boy, did she deliver a lot of people through the Underground Railroad to freedom. There's a book that's waiting about Clara Barton, the founder of the Red Cross, and I'm even going to read a book on James Longstreet, who was a Confederate general, and after the Civil War, said that it was their values that were defeated as Confederates, and that he worked the rest of his life to guarantee the civil rights for African Americans. It's interesting times, and I thought it would be interesting to see all these different perspectives. But one of the books that I read that was unexpected to me and its profoundness was Destiny of the Republic, about the assassination of President Garfield. And it wasn't about him, but it was about his vice president. Vice President Chester Arthur was corrupt. He was part of the political machine. He made money through kind of cozying up to the party bosses and getting choice appointments. He was okay with becoming the vice president because the vice president didn't do anything. It was kind of an anonymous job. And then when Garfield was shot and it appeared that he was going to die, Chester Arthur went into hiding because the last thing he wanted was to become president of the United States. Actually, it was the last thing almost everybody wanted was for him to become president of the United States. The New York Times wrote that regarding the pending calamity, of the utmost magnitude, about the last man who would be considered eligible for the job was Chester Arthur. Even Chester Arthur's closest friends would say Chet Arthur, President of the United States, good grief. No one saw anything in him except for this one lady. Her name was Julia Sand, and I've mentioned her before, not too long ago, but I just thought today would be a good time to come back and look at her. At 31, she was unmarried. She was homebound with an illness. Her father was a German immigrant, though rose up and became president of a utility company. So she had some privilege in her life. But her health was in constant decline, where she was very, very difficult for her to move around. She was mostly bedridden. And even towards the end of her life, she was placed in a mental asylum, never married, but known as somebody who had compassion, as somebody who was very intellectual. Well, she decided that maybe she should write Chester Arthur a letter. And she referred to herself as the president's little dwarf, and it's not because she was so small. It was that she thought she had really nothing much to give to him. But her writings are actually amazing of what she has, of what she wrote to him. And I like to read a little bit of that letter to you that she wrote. Because just right as the president's laying dying, she wrote this: great emergencies awaken generous traits which have lain dormant half a life. If there is a spark of true nobility in you now is the occasion to let it shine. Reform. No one believed in him except for her. And so she wrote that note. She continued writing letters to him, encouraging the very best of him. She She sent nearly 24 letters advising him, cajoling him, scolding him on policy matters. The change in him shocked his friends. The change in him shocked the nation. Even Mark Twain, who is skeptical of all politicians, said there was little wrong with the administration of Chester Arthur. And the only reason we know of these letters is because he kept them. And they were found by his grandson. So if it wasn't for him keeping them and finding, we would never know what caused him to change. But here's this lady who saw an opportunity from her bed. She wrote letters to him, and he actually read them and reformed. There are opportunities that we have constantly before us to make a difference. And I think we are at a time that needs people to step up just like that. I'll have to be really honest. I see a lot of postings on social media by Christ followers and some who attend here that have been adding fuel to the fire. And it hurts me to be able to stand here and to say that. We can do better. We must do better. So, I want to talk to us, all of us together as a group, of what we need to do before we add our 2 cents to the national debate. And really, it's things that we already know. We should ask ourselves before we say something, before we speak something, before we post something on social media, is it true? There is the term fake news, and I tell people fake news has been around all the way back to the revolutionary times. And it's frustrating that there are some people who embrace the term fake news, but yet they post things that are fake, that are untrue, because they did not fact check. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25 says this, "Therefore, having put away all falsehood, let us speak one of you, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another." We need to speak truth to one another because it's a part of building community. It is about keeping face with our neighbors. But the reality is we read something and we post it because we just agree with it. You know, it's funny when I was reading about this, is it true? And, you know, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Things come up and it says that Buddha said it, but as you look through it, Buddha never said it. So, you know, people have posted this thing as a saying from Buddha, but yet it's not a saying from Buddha. It's very important for us to fact check before we put things out there. And it's difficult to fact check. There have been times that I had to remove something that I had posted because I found out that it wasn't true. There's sometimes when you get into even finding stories or illustrations for a message, you know, I try to do some background checking to make sure that it's actual there, it's true, because there is so much out there that cannot be trusted. And things that people say, photographs can be doctored, videos can be altered very easily anymore. So let's make sure that we do all our homework and make sure if we're going to say something, do something, that it's true. And if we find out that later it's not true, then we should confess that and say, you know, I really thought it was. I'm sorry. I did not mean this. And one of the great features about Facebook and Twitter and Instagram is there's a delete thing. You can actually delete your posting. And there have been times that I have posted things and I've deleted them because of a variety of reasons. Sometimes it was just therapeutic to post it for that 2 seconds and then delete it. Is it true? The second thing is it kind? You know, and kind doesn't mean, you know, that, oh, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings. Sometimes the kindest thing is to hurt somebody's feelings. I know that sounds a little weird, doesn't it? But if it's hurting their feelings and keeping them from further harm, then that is a kindness. You know, when we used to watch, sometimes we would watch American Idol or America Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent. We would talk about Simon. Nobody seems to really like Simon, but actually he was kind of kind because he would tell them, "Oh no, you don't have talent. Don't pretend like you have talent." Now, he probably could have said it in a nicer way, but there was a kindness to that instead of having somebody believe something that wasn't true. But we want to make sure our words are gracious, not terse, and kind. Proverbs chapter 16 says, "Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body." So kindness is seeking the well-being of that person. The third thing is it necessary? Does this really need to be said? Does this person really need to hear it? And we have to ask ourselves that. Does this person actually need this information even at this time? Maybe they're not quite ready to hear this. Kind of like nowadays, do we really need to share how we feel about every political aspect of the unrest that's going on? No, we do not. But there are times that we recognize that things are necessary. The Apostle Paul in Romans talked about this, about people coming to Christ. He says this, "But how can they call on him to save them unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they have never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them?" So there is a necessity of us telling people something at times. There's a necessity of us sharing the gospel with someone. There's a necessity of us warning somebody if we see that there's impending danger. It is necessary. There are things that must be necessary that we must do. Now, that's usually what it is. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? That's the three that we normally hear. I'm going to add two more. And actually, I just took them from other places. So I've actually created five. So we got five things now from a couple different sources. One, is it inspiring? I kind of like that one. You know, is it true? Okay, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? But is it something that lifts the person up? Is it something that inspires them into nobility? Just like Sand's letter to Chester Arthur. If there's some nobility in you, rise up. Let reform. Now's the time. And so what we want to be able to do when we speak into something is not so much, we're not looking to condemn, but to inspire, to help people to rise up from the turmoil. I just believe that if we could just speak words like that into our situation, encouraging our political leaders not to be so petty and partisan in all of this, but to actually speak words of healing and ask them that to find those threads of nobility that are within them that we have because we are in the image of our Creator. The Apostle Paul, and when speaking to young Timothy, did this. Timothy was pastoring a very difficult church. And the Apostle Paul said this, I thank God whom I serve, as did my ancestors, with a clear conscience, as I remember you constantly in my prayers day and night. So he's telling them, I pray for you. And I remember your tears. I long to see you that I may be filled with joy. So these tears could be tears when they parted, the tears of the hardship that's going on, the struggles that he had, but he remembers the difficult things that Timothy has gone through. And I remember your tears. And I am reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure dwells in you as well. So he's saying you come from this spiritual stock of faithfulness. And not only do you have that, Timothy, I see it in you. You not only have a heritage, but you have the reality of it. For this reason, I remind you to fan in the flame the gift of God. Now, when do we fan things in the flame? It's usually when they're starting to kind of go out. Like when my fire is kind of dwindling at the house during the winter, get the bellows out, and I start pumping it to kind of get the flame back up. So Timothy is probably struggling here, and Paul says, oh, no, that's wrong direction. That's fan in the flame, the gift of God, which is in you through the laying of your hands, of my hands. For God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. So can we look at aspects of being and helping people to be inspired? I have to tell you, reading these books about these people have been some of the most inspiring stories, narratives that I have ever read in a long time. Booker T. Washington's book on Frederick Douglass was amazing and so fresh to read. About here's this man who escapes slavery and works to such a degree that he even has an audience with the President of the United States and helps the President of the United States understand that total freedom is the route to go. That a nation cannot be half slave and half free. That's an amazing story. Ulysses S. Grant, really, they talk about he's the unheroic hero. He comes from a hard scrabble life, a difficult life, a lot of failure in his life, and he rose to be a great general and actually a great president when we take a look at it from history's point of view. He fell on hard times because the narrative changed within our country. We allowed that inspiring story to be stripped away from us. There are so many inspiring stories out there that we appreciate, that we enjoy inspiring movies, but we can be inspiring to those around us too. So let us ask ourselves, is it inspiring? So is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it inspiring? Those are all important. And this is how they have to be wrapped. Are you the one who needs to say it? Am I the one who needs to say it? There are times that it might fit all these things. It's true, it's kind, it's necessary, it's inspiring. But me saying it, you saying it, might be unwelcomed. And we need to recognize that. And the only way that we understand that we have an opportunity to really speak if we build a relationship. People need to know that we care. There's the old saying that nobody cares what we think until they know how much we care, right? So we need them to understand that we genuinely care about them. And how do we care about them? We learn what they believe. We learn their position. We listen and to the best of our ability understand how they feel. None of that means you have to believe everything that they, of their position. It doesn't mean that you have to accept their politics. They don't have to accept your politics. That's all okay. There are some friends that I have that we politically disagree on a lot of things. But because of the relationship that we have built, we have opportunity to speak into each other's lives. And a lot of times when I have something that I want to say, I usually start like, well, I have something hard to say. I don't want you to take this wrong. I do all of that because that helps lay out the groundwork to let them know that I've heard what they've said. I just want to add this one aspect. But when they share an opinion, I listen politely, I demonstrate respect, I do not call them names. I do not belittle what they believe. And I try to repeat back to them what they said so that they would know that I actually listened. And when you do that, often enough, we tend to become the people that are the ones who need to say it. You know, we talk about the need for Christ in our lives and in our country. We say as Christ followers that we are sinful and we need Christ. We look at our brokenness in our country and we say they need Christ. They don't need better, you know, a new political scheme. They really need, it needs to start with Christ. And if we believe that, and we believe that we represent Christ, and we believe that we are transformed because we've confessed Him as our Lord and our Savior, and He rescued us and saved us, then that should show up. So, think long and hard before you enter in to the fray. You might need to go back and look at some of your Facebook postings and remove them. Maybe there's somebody within your sphere of influence that's posting something that's wrong, but it's from your side. Maybe you just send them a private message because we're not about public shaming. And just say, you know, you might want to pull that. That's not actually accurate. Just thought I'd give you a heads up about that. You know, I've done that with a lot of friends on both sides of the political aisle. I would send them a private message and say, hey, I just want you to know. And I'll have to say that the people who disagree with me tend to pull them, and the people who agree with me make an excuse why it's okay to keep it up. That's a little bit annoying. But because I'm of that political stripe or that conservative stripe or that Christian stripe, I'm allowed to speak a little bit stronger into that situation, and so are you. So let's do better. Not just because our nation deserves that from us, which it does, but let's do better because it honors Christ and reflects on Him well.